You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about pathways to intimacy, that emotional intimacy, which is often the hidden engine behind long-lasting, romantic, and strong relationships, has to be defined. What is it? What is intimacy? What is emotional intimacy? It's the deep connection that makes couples feel seen, safe, and supported. When it's missing, even relationships that seem perfect on the outside can often feel emotionally empty and unstable on the inside. So we're going to try to address that. And what does that mean? What are the characteristics of emotional intimacy? Well, according to research, couples with emotional intimacy will receive profound health benefits. It improves your mental health. What else does it do? Increases longevity. And beyond that, well, it can also provide resilience against life stressors. Couples that are together in emotional intimacy can handle stressful situations much better. Well, we're going to talk about that today and how maybe we can get better emotional intimacy in relationships. So let's talk about a definition of emotional intimacy. Like, what are couples that have emotional intimacy? What's in that relationship? What makes them different than other couples? For instance, it's the sense of closeness between the two people. It's the emotional connection. It grows when couples feel safe, when they are free to share their thoughts with each other without feeling that they're going to be criticized. They can share their fears and their dreams, you know, feelings with each other. It includes trust, empathy, vulnerability, and understanding. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, we did a show on empathy, and we talked about empathy and vulnerability and how those are two sides of couples therapy. That for couples therapy to be successful, the couple both have to have empathy and vulnerability. They have to allow themselves to be vulnerable, but they have to understand that their partner has empathy, that they will not feel like they're sharing something and they're going to be attacked or criticized. You know, so it's very interesting that this is now the next study. It includes vulnerability and empathy as well.
Kind of like the formula, you know?
It is a formula. Empathy and vulnerability. Now add to it, as this study did, as they looked at trust and understanding, being able to understand the other person. So it doesn't necessarily mean the same language, but it means the same underneath assignments to words. And what we mean by that is that we all have different definitions, different past experiences, different patterns that we draw our feelings from and the feelings that we associate with the language we use to communicate. If we are communicating something about our relationship that we had with our parents and it was very similar to our partner's relationship that they had with their parents, we will understand each other. If we grew up in completely different households and we don't understand the other person's upbringing, then we don't understand what they're saying. We don't understand their feelings. We don't understand their patterns. So understanding is...
And you lose the connection. So that's the connection, right? Intimacy.
Right. So to have the intimacy, you need to have that basis of understanding. It's almost like learning a language. I don't want to call it a love language, but a language of communication. When you communicate with anyone, you need to have a commonality of definitions. a commonality of how words match with the emotions that they bring up. You know, when you say parents and someone really had a bad experience in their household growing up, parents to them may be domineering, they may be critical, they may have this really bad experience. And for the other, they may have been in a very loving household growing up. And when they
So it depends on the person, because you can see two brothers or sisters in the same parents, and you interview each and have different view of the parents. So it's also personal view with the situation.
You're correct, because one may say they were always so critical of me, and the other one would say they were so challenging. They challenged me to do better in my life, and I succeeded so much. And the other was, they were always so critical of me, I could never do anything right.
Yeah.
And so it's the same parents, but how you perceive your parents. And part of that's born out of your own personality, right? So your own epigenetical traits that are triggered by your parents' programming and environment. So understanding, again, having that understanding, this is why we say it's important to understand each other in a relationship, to understand past relationships, understand family, understand friends, that when we understand all that, it makes the communication easier.
And understand yourself.
Sometimes that's the most difficult.
Yeah.
I don't want to look in a mirror.
No. Yeah.
So what's an example of emotional intimacy then? And here's one. A partner listening attentively and without judgment after a long, stressful day. So you come home from work, or you were just traveling and it was really stressful because the company you worked for was crazy. They weren't doing anything right. They blamed it all on you. You come home and you want to talk about something. And if the person, say me, listens to you, or I try to solve everything you say, well, they were this. Well, did you try this? Oh, they said this. Did you, you know, am I listening or am I?
Oh, you put your history in the top of my history.
Yeah, that too. Well, what happened to me in that situation is, how about feeling emotionally safe to cry in front of your partner? I might not feel safe because I feel like, you know how I cry a lot in movies. Sorry about that. But I don't know why, but I'm really emotional when it comes to movies. So you'll be just like watching a movie and I'll have tears. Why are you crying? I'm like,
and in fact,
I don't know. It's so happy. I'm so happy. Why are you crying? Because I'm so happy. Or I'm so sad. And that's interesting, too, that we sometimes cry because of emotions, but the emotions can be happy emotions, too. You see something that's really happy and it brings a tear to your eye. Why is that? That's not for today's show. That might be another show. How about being able to share fears or insecurities with your partner without feeling ridiculed or rejection or criticized? So here's some questions. These are questions to ask yourself, but we're going to ask each other these questions. When do you feel emotionally connected to your partner?
You ask me?
I'm asking you. When do you feel emotionally connected to your partner? That's me.
Okay.
When do you feel connected to me?
I guess in when we have a critical situation, I feel so connected. It can be sadness when I feel really connection when our parents...
Yes.
Death. So that's moment I feel that I have you and I can cry front to you.
Sure.
And this is one moment for connection.
I think I shared something with you on video. I'm not sure. It was a psychologist talking about intimacy and how early on in a relationship we may look at, the endorphins and the positive, the chemistries of those early, what is that? What is the chemical that we always talk
dopamine.
About?
Dopamine.
Dopamine, thank you. Wow, my dopamine was blocked for a moment. The words were blocked.
Okay.
But dopamine, we sometimes look for dopamine in relationships. So it's, intimacy in maybe physical touching and sex, right? So dopamine, we're looking for that. But it turns out that intimacy, emotional intimacy, is derived from going through stressful situations together and solving them together. That's like a vasopressin release, is that it's a bonding, long-term bonding chemicals are released when couples go through stress together and come out stronger on the other side. And I thought that was a great video for us to watch just prior to the show, is that it was kind of interesting that we went there. How about, are there things that you feel are difficult to share emotionally?
I can see maybe some embarrassed situations. So if you have one situation, it's embarrassed yourself, maybe it's difficult to share with you because I feel embarrassed.
Okay. It's an embarrassing situation. A situation where maybe you feel like the person will think lesser of you. So if I share how I feel in this situation, or if I share an emotion that I'm worried that you'll feel bad about, like if I say this, how will Lizette react? So sometimes intimacy is sometimes allowing yourself to be vulnerable in that situation. And again, knowing your partner has the empathy and the understanding and the mutual trust between the two of you.
Yeah.
Finally, what happens, and whether it's with, I guess, with me or any relationship, when you open up but you don't feel you're being heard or the person is validating or listening to your emotions, what happens in those situations?
When you feel or don't feel?
When you feel they're not listening to you. How does that make you feel?
Okay, so I feel so bad. I immediately close the connection. So if I start talk something important, I see the body language of you, that you take out the phone or you thinking and you just moving your eyes, I know that you know are with me at the moment, I completely close the door.
Speaking of that, they talked about eye rolling. This was another one, that an eye roll is a form of expressing hatred for a person. That's how it comes across. So you may be rolling your eye like just because that's how you feel, but how the other person feels of eye roll is almost like you were expressing hatred. So this is where we need to be recognizing our emotional responses, being emotionally intelligent, right? Being cognitive of the emotional connection we have and not to damage it. That is, I believe, the intro to our program, right? Emotional intimacy. When we come back, we're going to talk more about emotional intimacy and some of the moderating effects of the things that were found in this study. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, there was a couple and a newborn baby. Or should I say, a single mum. This brave young lady left her 9-to-5 job to follow her passion and started a consulting business. Her friends helped out. She travelled the world, met new people, and again came home. The woman dated to find a man who would fill her life and fit her plan. She met a guy who checked out ladies. That burned her up. That made her crazy. Other guys were full of verve, into their self, no room for her. And one time she met a man with patch over eye and axe in hand. Then one day she had enough. Her little boy was all grown up, tired of attracting the wrong type of guy. It was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about emotional intimacy and some parameters around it, one called cognitive flexibility and the other called emotional dysfunction, or let's call it the other, emotional regulation? How about like almost emotional intelligence within the relationship? So what is cognitive flexibility? Sounds like the flexibility of your mind to grasp different things and be accepting of different perspectives. Mm-hmm. It almost sounds like it's a pathway to empathy and understanding. Let's see how it's defined.
Okay.
Cognitive flexibility is the ability to think about things in multiple ways. It's like I can touch my toes, but doing that with your brain, I can stretch over here. Adapt to new information and shift your perspectives. You would then maybe change your approach when necessary to a given situation. It's the opposite of being rigid in your ways, of I never change, I'm always the same, never learning. Mm-hmm. Right? I am who I am. How about an example in a relationship? When you choose to pause a fight and revisit the conversation with a calmer tone, that's considered cognitive flexibility. I'll choose a different path. It's almost like being like water. Mm-hmm. When water hits a wall, it looks for a hole in the wall. It looks for a path over here. It's what is the easy way to make that connection with your partner rather than the rigid, strict way. Realizing that your partner's silence means they're overwhelmed. If they're not talking with you, there might be a reason you might have overwhelmed them. And now you need to seek again understanding, empathy, and listen. It could also mean they're not ignoring you, they just don't know what to say. We had this conversation at breakfast today, mm-hmm. is how I said, how you wait for me to answer because you know that I go through a lot of different thoughts and I change my mind quite often. You give me time to kind of sift through all those thoughts and give you a proper response. And I recognize that you do that.
Thank you.
How about trying out new ways to resolve conflict when old ways or traditional ways aren't working? That is a sign of cognitive flexibility. Again, new paths, new thoughts, new understandings, new ways, new methods, rather than being rigid in your thought structure. How do you usually react when things don't go as planned?
I try to figure out, always thinking the solution. So when something is not going this way, I immediately start to plan in the different way. So that is how my mind works.
So it's not reactive. It's not being reactive emotionally to the situation, but how to work through it, come up with a solution. Mm-hmm. Maybe talk to your partner, mm-hmm. share how you're feeling, discuss how they're feeling, try to gain a common sense of understanding.
How about you? How are you reacting when
it all depends. Sometimes I want to jump and have the solution, and I want to just, like you've seen before, where it's like, just do what I want. Like, okay, there's a situation, we need to do this. And then sometimes it's try to do quick action and not listen and not take feedback. So that's sometimes the case. Mm-hmm. But it depends on the level of, is it an emergency? Is the basement flooding? Mm-hmm. Where's the suitcase? Where did I put my iPhone? Where are the keys to the car? Some things are really unimportant, and so you can be more flexible in how you approach it versus how I feel sometimes is if there's a problem, you don't look at alternatives. You're like, I got to solve this. And sometimes maybe that's not the right thing to do. It's like, well, what might be the right way to solve this? And looking at that with you.
Yeah, no, so I guess my own exercise is thinking about risk, you know, mm-hmm. so if this is all important. So if it's something important and risky, I need to pay attention. But if it's something not important, risky, I have to be relaxed because you cannot control everything.
Sure. So
the plan is not doing. Keep going, you know.
Okay. How about another question then for mm-hmm. you? Have you ever noticed yourself becoming mentally stuck in a disagreement?
Yes. Yes.
That you think one way, I think another, or with somebody else, and that it's like, I
hear also because sometimes when you have some disagreement, your mind keep going thinking in the same topic again. Mm-hmm. So I am reading a book that say that you can stay 4 hours.
Wow.
Your brain stay 4 hours when just cycle the same
trying
situation.
To solve it in your head.
Yeah.
When there's no solving.
Yeah. And also the bad feelings. So if you feel angry because some situation happened, so, and then you keep going thinking, maybe I have to say this stuff in the moment, but I didn't. And, and then you create many, many scenarios, and the same issue in your brain can be stuck in for hours there.
An endless loop.
Yeah.
A loop. Cycle.
Yeah. So okay. Now I learn, so you and I observe myself in this loop. I have to say, stop thinking something different, because you really don't make any solution thinking in the past to figure out the scenario. It's no.
How do you become flexible in your thinking process in order to change the route you're taking to try to come to a solution?
Yeah.
That is flexibility, cognitive flexibility. Can you think of a time where you shifting your thought pattern saved an argument, meaning save the relationship rather than continuing with the argument?
Yeah, that's
every day.
That's the typical, typical be happy or be right.
You know?
So sometimes I don't want to be right. So
choose to be happy.
Happy. So it's like that you say yes, it's no, okay?
Learn what you can change and what you can't change.
Yeah. Right?
Okay. So how about the role? What do you think? There's a big role of emotional intimacy for cognitive flexibility? Do you think cognitive flexibility impacts emotional intimacy?
Of course.
Of course it does.
Of course.
So a flexible thinker considers their partner's emotional needs. They adjust their language or tone during a sensitive conversation. You know, instead of fighting back, maybe it's like, let me understand more. Let me change how I say something. And maybe I change the words, because maybe you're not actually understanding my perspective because of the words I'm using, because they don't relate to this thing we're discussing in the way that makes sense to you. So I have to look at it from a, if I change the words, I change my perspective, but that also changes your perspective.
How about change the tone of the words? So why do people scream sometimes? What do you think?
Because the more I scream, the more you understand what I'm saying.
What?
Well, the scream is when you're in your feelings and your emotions and you're not in your prefrontal cortex, you're screaming, and that actually shuts down your ability to think. So when you're angry in an argument, and we've talked about this as well, is that you have less likelihood of the ability to solve and be emotionally intimate or being flexible in your thinking. It's hard to be flexible in your thinking when you're not in your pure conscious mind and you're in your anger mind, which is, once again, anger is part of our survival instincts, and it is a deeper, hard-set part of our behavior that stops us from being able to think and come up with a creative solution. It's really find a way to safety immediately, flight or fight. So anger takes us away from a mutually beneficial solution to a problem, right? Here's a question. When has your partner, that's me, adapted to your emotional needs? Have I ever?
Explain me more.
So has there ever been a time where I, at first, was not connected with you well, and then I made a change in the conversation or approached it differently, where then I met your needs in this argument?
Yes.
You're on the spot.
Yeah, so I guess we are really open, honest. Our challenge when we discuss topic is sometimes you be distracting. Okay, so and the way that you coming back is I close my mouth and waiting for you landing. Mm-hmm. And when you landing, we keep going. So I guess that can be one of the way that we reconnect.
Arguing with somebody with ADHD. Oh, I'm sorry, having a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even have to be an argument. Sometimes it's that connection, which is we can always come up with excuses why we don't have the connection. Whereas when we understand the feelings of the other person and have the empathy to try to understand what their feeling is and understand that they'll be even more vulnerable and share more with us the more we connect.
Yeah.
That's emotional intimacy.
Yeah.
Here's an example. Imagine you want to vent about a tough day, and we were just talking about this. Your partner, instead of saying, "You're overreacting," they validate your feelings and later offer advice if needed. But the first thing is validate the emotion. "I'm listening to you. I hear you. It sounds like you were upset. Tell me more about that."
I do different techniques. So when you are like that, I say, "Oh, I recognize he's upset." I prepare some potion. I say, "Drinking that," and you become calm. I don't know. So
that's called dinner.
Yes.
That's the potion. The potion is dinner. So let's leave that section there. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about emotional dysregulation, which is when you're not able to regulate your emotions and how that disrupts emotional intimacy in a relationship. Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams. In moments of gratitude, we notice the beauty in every detail, the smiles, the shining eyes, the teamwork, perseverance, and effort. These are the building blocks of the incredible mission AyutaVen supports. We've witnessed girls who joined the home as babies grow into confident professionals, certified in their passions and contributing to society in meaningful ways. Three inspiring stories from AyutaVen. Angela, who came to Muchos Manos at 3 months of age. She will graduate as a food and beverage manager with plans to open her own bakery. Maria, who joined Muchos Manos at the age of 9. Today she's in her second year of dentistry. And Mercedes, who came to the home at the age of 12. Now a dentist graduate, she works at one of Valencia, Venezuela's top dental centers. Make a donation today via Zelle at gym@ayutaven.org and celebrate the rhythm of hope, purpose, and unity that connects us all together. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. Today we're talking about emotional intimacy. We're talking about cognitive flexibility and emotional dysregulation. How emotional dysregulation and cognitive flexibility impact
the relationship.
Emotional intimacy in a relationship, or the relationship from a perspective of emotional intimacy. So what is emotional dysregulation? It's basically when you can't regulate your emotions. And that's tough. That's like neuroticism in a way, right?
Yeah.
So here's a definition. It refers to the difficulty in managing, understanding, or responding to one's emotions in healthy ways. It's kind of like not having emotional intelligence. Overreacting to minor stress. Feeling overwhelmed by emotions and having trouble calming down after being upset. It's when you can't regulate your emotions. That's emotional dysregulation. An example in a relationship is yelling or shutting down during arguments, either being so emotionally angry that you yell at your partner, or you just stop talking and you don't communicate. So those are extremes of emotional dysregulation. Feeling stuck or in shame or sadness for a few days at a time when you can't regulate again your emotions. Using blame, manipulation, or withdrawal to cope with emotional discomfort. So I look at some of this and go, and if you don't have empathy for the other person, and we talk about that traits of narcissist, psychopath, and sociopath, one of the big traits is lack of empathy.
Yeah.
Or the only person they have empathy for is themselves.
Yeah, nobody exists.
I don't, like, your how your feelings are, they don't impact me at all. I don't feel at all. You're upset, you're happy, I don't care. It's all about me.
Yeah.
That's more of the narcissist, right? All about
me.
How do you, hey, let's have a conversation. It's enough about me. What do you think about me? I've talked enough about myself. What do you think about me?
Yeah.
Right? So that's narcissism. When do you feel out of control emotionally?
When?
Yeah.
Because when you be attacked, sometimes you feel like that.
You mean like when? Why am I yelling at you? Or why am I? And like I might not even feel like I'm angry. I just might be energized about what I'm saying, and it might not be like true anger, but like I think that both of us have a challenge with emotions. Meaning, I don't like to see you angry. I don't like to see you sad. Like I don't know how to react. So in for me, emotions and somebody being extremely emotional, one way or the other, I have a hard time with, because I you know, it makes me shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's it the same. Yeah.
When do you feel like your emotions are too big? And I don't know if you do. I don't think you do. Like your emotions are too big. Like you can't handle your emotions.
You never listen to me screaming or be out of my mind, I guess.
No? No, because I go, nah, and I don't listen. No, that's not true. No, you're right. I don't. How about, and we just talked about this, how do you feel when your partner expresses intense emotion? And that's more for our listening audience than us, because I think both of us don't really express intense emotion unless I've hit my finger with a hammer or something. But that's pain.
Yeah.
Is pain an emotion? I guess it can result in some kind of anger.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe embarrassment too. Like, how could I do something so stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how does emotional dysregulation impact emotional intimacy? I think very negatively, obviously.
Yeah.
It can affect both sides of the relationship. First, the discloser, the person who is trying to express their feelings, if they have emotional dysregulation, may not be able to express them clearly. They may explode emotionally and push their partner away. Now, on the other hand, the person who's listening to them, if they are emotionally dysfunctional or have dysregulation, they may feel overwhelmed. They may be unsure how to respond, or they may respond erratically.
Yeah.
You know, overwhelmingly angry or shut down, right?
Mm-hmm. Frozen, yeah.
So how do you do, or what do you do to calm yourself when you're angry?
Take a breath. Is that the first step? And try to thinking different for myself. So if I feel something that again, in my mind running, mm-hmm. I need to say, okay, I need to be distracted with something first and go back to take a time. So I not go immediately to the problem.
Right. Take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
Let the emotions calm down. And now I can think clearer about what's going on.
Yeah.
We can have a better discussion about what's going on rather than how upset either is.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people, I've heard people talk about the arguments they're having between friends, and they seem so irrational, and I don't get them. I don't understand them,
mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes. So, again, not having, you know, drama, reduced drama. And unfortunately, some of us have grown up with drama. Maybe social media has provoked drama. We feed on drama, and drama is what gets us, our, you know, people pay attention to us when we discuss things with drama. So we make up more stuff, or we don't really make it up. But when people are listening to us because we're creating drama, then it becomes more natural for us to provide dramatic situations more often, especially if that's the only time we get attention.
And this is something learned. So the baby cry and the mama pay attention. So that is something right. Program coming from child. So that is one channel for
never,
somebody pay me attention.
Never ever pick up your child when they're crying.
No. You know, my mama would say, come in here when I fell. And I pick up here. So we need to walk in. Never mind.
Again. And then what do you have to think? How to get up?
I'm going to the floor. I start to cry again.
And but you learn to regulate yourself.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good technique, I believe.
It is.
Yeah.
It, you know, and some people are like, how can you not pick up a crying baby? It's like, because you're trying to help the baby self-regulate.
Yeah.
You know, there was this whole thing about, and I forget the word or the style or technique, but there was one about never picking up a crying baby at night. If you remember this, it's like, Oh, if the baby's crying in bed, you need to let the baby cry in bed. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about this at all today, but I just remember there were ones where as soon as the baby cries, you need to pick them up and comfort them because they're just a bundle of emotions at that point and they don't know any better. Mm-hmm. And the other is, no, you need to teach them right away that they have to look inside themselves for comfort. And you can have a conversation with them about that, too.
I cannot tell you that. For me, no, my mama pick up my brother so much.
Yeah.
So I am the second one, and she promised not touch me. So she tired. Not touch me.
So tired.
So this is what you have.
So I shouldn't pick you up if you're upset, is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I'll stop that. Mm-hmm. What else do we have here? So the indirect role of emotional dysregulation is that it impacts cognitive flexibility. They're almost opposite things. So cognitive flexibility is the ability to change quickly your thoughts or how you react, how you process a conversation. So your arguments are toned down. So you work on solutions. Again, when we work on a solution together, a stressor together, and we de-stress it together, we build that chemical bond, the vasopressin bond, right, I believe, that is for long-term romantic and loving partnership and connection.
Yeah.
So you want to be able to live more in the cognitive flexibility part of, or be cognitive flexible rather than emotionally dysfunctional or dysregulated.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yeah.
So this is a study that was done with 528 college students, mostly women, 84% were women, and they were aged 18 to 24. They were all in romantic relationships for 3 months, and they did a study on cognitive flexibility and emotional dysfunction. And I keep saying dysfunction, dysregulation, the inability to regulate emotions. We're going to talk about the results of the study and what they learned about and from this group of mostly women, but over 500, 18 to 24. So why was this group chosen? Because emerging adulthood, right? You're getting 18 to 24, you're becoming an adult. I believe they say like 26 is like when your brain finally snaps over to like, oh, I'm an adult now, right?
Mm.
But this is, you're going from youth to more seasoned in your emotional regulation, in your relationships, a little bit more nuanced. It's time when cognitive flexibility and emotion regulation are forming. So this is why the study was done with this group. Part of this is something that you would now think about when you were 18 to 24. If you went back in time, this is for us to think about, what would you teach your younger self about emotional intimacy?
So if I think in the, I have 18?
If you're talking to your 18-year-old self, what would you mm-hmm. say about emotional intimacy?
With the knowledge that I have right now,
yeah.
Maybe I can say, I believe the thinking in my maybe first boyfriend, you know, I become more like the innocent to forgive stuff and keep going with the wrong way relationship. So I guess the I keep in many years with something that I believe is no good, because I don't have the knowledge right now. So I break up, but I take a long time for break up.
So you might have broken up in a relationship faster, or may have had a tool to work through a challenge that you had. Like for me, not being vulnerable, learning that by sharing emotions, you can be have a deeper connection.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe at that point in my life, I wasn't ready for a deep connection. I wasn't ready to be able to talk clearly and deeply with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should have been. But I look back and I go, oh, I should have done that. And I go, well, should I have? Or am I just really happy where I am now with you, baby? So the result of this study, here are four outcomes of the study. Number one. Cognitive flexibility directly predicts emotional intimacy. work on cognitive flexibility. Number two, emotion dysregulation, the ability to inability to regulate your emotions, partly mediates this relationship. So even if you're cognitively flexible, but you have dysregulation of your emotions, it kind of negates the benefit of being able to be flexible and thinking. There was no significant gender differences in the results. And finally, the lack of access to emotion regulation strategies was the strongest indirect link to emotional intimacy. So if you didn't have access to strategies for emotional, or should I say cognitive flexibility, you ended up having less likelihood of having a emotionally intimate relationship. And would you be surprised by these findings? This question, do you think this makes sense?
Yeah.
So lastly, I want to talk about, when we come back, a couple of other items, and we'll wrap it up. How about that?
Yes, go ahead.
Great.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams. Welcome back to our show on emotional intimacy and the role of cognitive flexibility and emotion dysregulation in the ability to have a good, close, connected relationship. Let's look at some real-world examples of relationships. Let's look at these real-life or fictional relationships and see if they have emotional flexibility or not. You ready for that? And then we'll do some tips on how to have emotional, cognitive flexibility, emotional regulation in your relationship. Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Well, I think we've, what is that called? Hit that one over the head a few too many times, but this volatile relationship featured emotional outbursts as well as lack of regulation, inability to resolve conflict, vulnerability without empathy, and somebody being maybe making fun and critical of the other, and the other not knowing how to handle it and running away, so shutting down, right? So that was one. Politics. How about Prince Harry and the royal family? Now, this is a relationship between a family. Conflict stemmed in part from miscommunication and entrenched perspectives of each other. A lack of emotional flexibility could have made the reconciliation between them much harder. And then lastly, for us older folk, Ross and Rachel from Friends. They were on a break. Saga was fueled by rigid beliefs, right? Emotional defensiveness and poor conflict resolution, slowing their reconnection. So it's a TV show. But would things have turned out differently for these groups, these couples, these families, if they had emotional regulation and they had cognitive flexibility? We don't have to answer that, but I think the answer's, of course.
Yeah.
So how do we get that in our relationship? Here's some tips.
Okay, go ahead. Go to the tips.
Tip number one, practice active listening. Listen for understanding. Listen for empathy. That also helps build trust and allows your partner to be vulnerable. Okay. I think I hit all four. Use I statements. I feel this way, not you make me feel.
Okay.
Learn to pause. Take a break before responding. So it comes out of thinking rather than emotion. So not reactive, but thinking, cognitive. Build your toolbox. Come up with strategies of being more emotionally flexible, more cognitively flexible. Stay curious. Learn more about your partner. Learn more about their history. Learn more about their family. Learn where their words and perspectives come from that make understanding better and easier. Reflect and reframe. So when you hear your partner say something, say, what I'm hearing you're saying is this. Is that what you're saying? So you seek understanding first. This is like Stephen Covey, isn't it? Seek understanding first before you seek to be understood. These are great ways to build emotional intimacy with your partner. Do journaling exercises together. Maybe write about something and then share it with your partner. Role play on how you'd respond differently with your partner. Maybe you can make some funny, angry role plays as well as some completely different ways of responding during to different situations. So you start becoming flexible in how you react rather than monolithic, or rather than just emotional. It's like now you think that you have multiple ways. You can do a humorous reaction, a serious reaction, an angry reaction, and you learn about these different ways of reacting, and now maybe you'll think of reacting differently in a given situation. Finally, take turns in sharing with each other.
I guess it's important to say, yesterday when I training a group, we have some practical exercise for an interview. So we developed some kind of skill, like the people need to know how question do, but and also how they respond, handle. So in the middle of the practical, the person that do question to me is confused. Question. So I say I don't understand the question, and I go that he take up my word for say, oh, you are confused. Your answer's confused, so you they flipping this is happen when you have emotional discussion between couple. So I am in the middle of this, and I say, oh, you're right, I am confused. Because maybe you also confused with the question. So we can start again. And we start again the exercise. And then the person got it. Say, yes, I create a confused question. So sometimes you need to say, no, feel accused that you confuse me. You say that I am confused because create more emotions. So, okay, stop. You're right, because people like to hear that, but the point is no. So I say, yes, you're right. Okay, so now we start again the exercise. Start again. And then the second time, the person smiles and says, I got it. So sometimes this technique works.
It does work. Early on in my career, I remember an Italian company sending a note to somebody I worked with and said, you're misunderstanding what I'm telling you. Rather than, I think we're miscommunicating, that we're miscommunicating.
Yeah, include yourself.
It was, you're misunderstanding. Yeah. You're not understanding what I'm telling you. And it was, I went back to the Italian company, the person I knew there, and I said, listen, this is how it comes across. I'm not sure if you meant it this way, but I'm sure that the other people did misunderstand what you said. But at the same time, it was a complex situation. And so maybe it's the communication needs to be clearer rather than you misunderstood. And they said, thank you. I understand what you're saying. Let me try that again.
Okay.
And then the note came back. I could have been clearer in my explanation the first time. This is what I'm talking about. If you have any questions, let me know. Rather than you misunderstood. And, and that made a big, big thing of difference. Big piece of difference. So today we were talking about emotional intimacy in relationships, cognitive flexibility, and emotional dysregulation. We led ourselves through a series of questions and examples and situations, but where we came up with is that mutual trust, vulnerability, empathy, and what was the last thing? Understanding. Were four pillars of a close, intimate relationship that these tools of cognitive flexibility, and we're going to call this emotional intelligence rather than emotional dysregulation. Emotional intelligence combined with cognitive flexibility mm-hmm. will improve your intimate relationship.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.